Hello, everyone.
Oh, my God.
This is Kate.
And this is Kevin.
Welcome to Horrorwood. A moment.
Oh my God. I was showing Kate a Chef Boyardee commercial from the 90s where this crazy kid with pasta sauce all over his face went, beefy.
And right as he said that, my microphone just popped out of its socket and landed on my computer, and there was like this huge crash. And I'm a little nervous.
It's scary. Whatever demons we've conjured by talking about ghosts.
So many. Kate, oh my goodness.
I think they saw the ravioli commercial and were just like, that's it.
This is triggering. Yikes. You want to say all the things that we have to say?
So Kate, we won an award.
Yes, we did. Okay, so for all of the people listening who don't follow us on social media, because we posted it there. And if you already heard this, I'm sorry. You can fast forward for like a minute. Because we're going to announce it again because we're super excited.
We're excited about it.
We were named the Crime Podcast of the Year by the American Writing Awards.
Thank you, American Writing Awards.
Which is crazy.
It's fabulous.
And I said this on our Patreon episode, but when I got the email, it was just like an email saying, here are the winners. And it's the first contest we've ever entered. And I was like, we're not going to win. I just want to like...
just put us out there.
Yeah.
You know.
And so I click on the little link and I'm scrolling through and I see our logo under the crime category. And I was like, oh, this is just a list of all the shows that entered. You know, where's the winner's list?
Yeah.
And so I closed out because I couldn't find it. And I logged back onto it and it was that same list. And it was like, winner, crime, Horrorwood.
Horrorwood.
And I was like, I think maybe we won.
I love it.
And then they sent us
the winner's
the
email.
Personal email. And I, like, it's crazy because we know how saturated the true crime category is in the podcast realm. So thank you all for listening.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in. And yeah, we're super excited. And if you don't follow us on social, pop on over there. Give us a quick click.
Follow at Horrorwood Podcast.
There it
on
is.
On Instagram, Facebook, and...
well, YouTube is not really like social media.
Right.
They don't get all the little ditties. So yes, thank you. You guys are awesome. And we hope to just keep giving you guys great episodes. I was going to try to segue into this episode, but
there's another announcement.
There is.
We have a new Patronian.
Yay.
Her name is Erica Viola.
Or Viola. We're not sure,
so we'll say it both ways.
Yes. Erica, thank you
Welcome.
So much. Your support means so much to us. It allows us to pay for things like the hosting site where we put all of our sound files, and that's not cheap. And
a microphone arm that doesn't try to kill Kate before
God.
We record.
That was really scary, actually.
Beefy.
All right.
Okay.
Now, speaking of beef,
meats, and cheeses.
Okay. I hope that's
which
part of this episode.
Which makes me think of a charcuterie board, and charcuterie boards usually get eaten by the wealthy. Okay, there we go.
There it is.
There's the degrees. In the tapestry of human existence. That's one way to start off.
Wow. We're already going there.
We're going in it.
Okay.
Some individuals shine with a unique brilliance.
Who are you right now?
Leaving an indelible mark on those they encounter. Listen, I wanted to put some fancy words in there.
You sure did.
Mimi Boomhauer.
Mimi Boomhauer.
Boom Mike.
I love the name.
I love it too.
Mimi Boomhauer.
She's
but
amazing.
I have a feeling something bad happens to
yeah,
her.
Yeah. Uh-oh. She was so Mimi Boomhauer, known as the Merry Widow, was one such individual, a beacon of warmth, resilience, and kindness. Boomhauer was a well-known socialite living in Los Angeles. She was a very wealthy woman who inherited her husband, novice. Her husband. Sorry.
I thought she just inherited her husband.
She inherited a husband.
Wow.
Me too.
That's how it happened back in the day.
I found him on the street.
Oh.
Well.
I mean, could work out.
Never know. Running down Boys Town, just grabbing, grabbing what I can. Oh, looking for a hot meal.
No. Oh, God, you guys.
Sorry. Anywho, this is Unhinged. So she was married to a man named Novice Boomhauer.
Novice. What an interesting choice of a name for your child.
I know, right? I wonder if that word, I wonder what the etymology of that word was back in the night, like when he was named in the late 1800s.
Right. I just wonder if that was a popular.
I think it might have been. And I saw it spelled differently, like N-O-V-I-C-E, like what we would think novice, and then N-O-V-I-S.
Huh. Okay.
So I'm going to go with N-O-V-I-C-E because that's what's on his gravestone.
I see. Okay.
He passed away in 1943, leaving dear Mimi a widow.
Okay.
But on August 18th, 1949, 48-year-old charming Mimi would sadly go missing and never be seen again.
Oh.
This is the unsolved disappearance of Mimi Boomhauer.
Oh, goodness. And I'm sorry, how long after her husband died did you say she went missing?
6 years.
Oh, okay.
To the day.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
We'll get into it.
All right.
So sadly, there isn't a ton of information out there about her life. Mm-hmm. Normally on this podcast, we go deep into people's, you know, histories and lives. I really couldn't find much about her.
That's sad.
It is sad. I wish we could, you know, and I think, as I was saying to you earlier, I feel like because she wasn't like a starlet or someone famous, like, unfortunately, people weren't keeping track of her.
But you're telling her story.
I'm telling her story now. Who knows? So according to findagrave.com, mm-hmm. her full name was Emily Edith Ann Mimi Lujan Boomhauer.
Well, I see why she just shortened it to Mimi.
Yes. She was born in 1896 in Manhattan, New York.
Oh.
However, I will say that most outlets reporting on her disappearance say she was born in 1901.
That's a bit of a jump.
I feel like they have some misinformation because I was on Web Sleuths, because Web Sleuths really are into this case.
Oh, interesting.
And like trying to find things.
Those
like
digilantes.
The cowboys of the internet. So yeah, that was interesting. So that would put her at 52 when she went missing, not 48.
I also feel like when it's around that time period, like late 1800s, early 1900s, because I've had this happen in a few cases too, where it's off by a couple of years depending on the source, which is interesting. But I mean, it's not uncommon.
I also feel like, because as I was looking up old newspaper clippings, I feel like this was popular at the time in LA when it happened. And so a lot of other news outlets in the US picked it up and then started spreading that same misinformation.
They just kind of copy and paste. And
this is all I could find about her origins, other than she married into the Boomhauer linoleum fortune.
Okay.
Her husband, Novice, was also a big game hunter.
Oh.
In addition to being rich, and would take Mimi with him on safari trips. Mm-hmm. Novice passed away on August 17th, 1943. His grave is located in Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale, Los Angeles, California.
Where so many people that we've talked about episode. Are buried. They're all there.
His gravestone reads, Novice E. Boomhauer, beloved husband.
So he died on the 17th.
Yes.
And she disappeared on the 18th years later.
Yes. Friends of Mimi called her fun-loving Mimi.
Okay.
And she frequented the social scene in Los Angeles.
Yeah, she did.
Making appearances out on the town all the time.
Hey, girl, get it.
Yeah, she loved being social.
Who wouldn't? Well, me. I hate people.
I hate people, too. I was like, let me stay home and not talk to anyone.
But you know what? Good for her.
Good for her. She liked
out
it.
There. Yeah.
She had inherited quite a bit of money after Novice's death, along with a sizable big game trophy collection from her late husband's game hunting.
Ooh.
So this is when I was thinking of the trophies, this means actual taxidermied and mounted animal heads.
That's what I assumed you meant.
And not little statuettes for the biggest lion or elephant, which is what I thought it was.
Biggest lion. No, I immediately
went
to taxidermy.
Oh, she had these little trophies of like, big taxidermied.
Hate it either way.
I don't like it. Mimi went to all the hot Hollywood nightclubs and prestigious events. Money got you places for sure. She loved jewelry, like decked to the nines in jewels. And she'd often wear big diamond encrusted pieces, flaunting her wealthy status.
Once you say, here's what I got, the wrong people can look at that and be like,
Yeah, and we'll also get into that theory of what happened there. But she lived in a huge 10-room Spanish-style mansion in Bel Air.
Oh, wow.
Located on the 700 block of Nimes Road, N-I-M-E-S.
Sure, Nimes. Sounds great.
Her physical appearance was described as jovial and plump, which is not important, but I'm just throwing it out there.
Sure.
I didn't like how newspapers were like, she was a plump woman.
I've seen that reported in so many newspapers, especially like old-timey ones.
Yeah.
Where they describe a women's bodies appearance.
Yeah.
I mean, magazines do it today still.
Of course,
like
they do.
With any kind of award season, they're like, and she looked svelte and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it's just like,
I like the word plump, though. Instead of fat, call me plump.
That made it sound like I call you fat. When you're like,
oh my God,
instead
no,
of
no,
calling
no, no.
me fat, you
Kate,
can just call me plump.
Don't call me fat anymore. Please call me plump.
Getting it back together.
Money doesn't last forever.
Oh.
Especially when you aren't doing much to bring it in. She was just living off her husband's inheritance and nothing was... I mean, there were some business ventures, which I'll talk a little bit about. And Mimi really liked to spend, which eventually led her to some financial turmoil.
Uh-oh.
In the year of her disappearance, 1949... Mimi was seemingly having money troubles. She had taken out a $5,000 loan at the time in order to fund a new business in folding wooden furniture.
Folding wooden furniture?
Think of like a TV tray.
Okay,
or
okay.
Or like a
got
chair.
It, got it.
$5,000 today would be the equivalent of $65,000. I liked looking at all these numbers.
I do too. I love looking at what it is today.
The business didn't really go anywhere, so she started selling some of her personal assets.
Okay.
Including novices' hunting trophies and a watch that was worth $3,000 at the time.
Jeez.
Which is $39,000 today. Guess how much she pawned that for?
How much?
$100.
Stop. Why would she accept so little?
That's a good question.
I don't even understand that.
I don't either. It was reported.
$3,000 watch, and she's like, okay,
she
I'll take 100.
She hawked it for $100.
That sounds like desperation.
Desperation. Mm-hmm. She was also looking to sell the house.
Okay.
Which at the time was worth $75,000. Today, $978,000.
Oh, wow.
Almost $1 million.
I'm actually surprised it was that low, to be honest.
Yeah.
Considering it's like this mansion in Bel Air.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in today, probably, like, that's the monetary value. I'm sure the value Bel Air would be like...
You're right.
Millions.
You're right.
But I hear you. Mm-hmm. Despite the issues with finances, Mimi still wore a lot of jewelry.
She liked the jewels.
$5,000 worth of jewelry at the time.
Like that she would wear all at once?
That's how much her pieces were worth.
That's like one of these actresses walking the red carpet on awards night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like her trip to Whole Foods.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, that's over $300,000 in today's money of jewels that she would wear.
Oh my goodness.
She liked them diamonds. A gift on the hand. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Friend. Like Nicole Kidman in Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to see how far you went with
I
that.
I didn't want to go any further. I'm on a swing, swinging around.
He kept looking
Kate
at me like I was going to join
in. And Kate just stared at me like, go on.
Go on, let's see how you can
keep
this
going.
Up.
The thing is, the one thing that Mimi wouldn't part with was her jewels.
I see.
So one year prior to her disappearance, a senior curator of habitat groups at Los Angeles County Museum recalled visiting her home to look at some of her husband's big game trophies.
Okay.
No offer was made to her. She was looking to sell them to the
museum.
Right, No offer was made because the museum was moving to only exhibiting full-size game. Not just mounted heads. They were like, we're not doing the mounted head thing anymore.
I hate this whole conversation, okay, keep going.
But so this point, I mean, even a year prior to the disappearance, she was trying to like get back in the money game. So on August 17th, 1949, 6 years to the date of her husband's death, Mimi was set to have dinner with her friend, Stella Hunter.
Stella. I love that name.
Stella! I hated that I just did that.
I liked it.
Stella got a call from Mimi that evening, canceling their plans without giving any kind of actual reason for it. She was just called and was like, I need to cancel.
Okay.
It seems like it was a pretty quick call to Stella. and it didn't seem very characteristic of Mimi to cancel plans. She was the life of the party, the toast of the town. Like, she loved being out, so sure. Canceling was just, if she had to, she would.
Maybe she was feeling a little under the weather that evening.
Perhaps, but I feel like she would have mentioned that to Stella. Hmm. She called and was like, I have to cancel, bye.
And hung up.
From what the newspapers reported and Stella told the police, mm-hmm. It sounds like that was what happened.
Wow.
So this is where things are weird kind of immediately.
Oh, okay.
On Thursday, August 18th, 1849, Mimi went to see her business manager, Carl Manaugh, M-A-N-A-U-G-H.
Okay.
In the afternoon, she told him that her plans that night consisted of meeting a gentleman at her home in Bel Air.
Like a gentleman, or like a I'm going to buy your animal heads gentleman?
They don't know. Oh. He didn't inquire.
Okay.
That's all the information she offered up to Carl. Okay. She just said she was meeting a gentleman at her house. Mimi said she would give Carl a call around 8:30 p.m. that evening.
Okay.
She didn't explicitly tell him who this guy was or why she was meeting him, but since this was her business manager, Carl assumed she told him that information because it was maybe about selling the house.
Okay.
Like maybe she didn't, it doesn't seem like they had a very personal relationship.
I see. So it was Mimi and Carl.
Mimi and Carl, okay. Yeah. It didn't seem like she'd want to offer up like, oh, I'm meeting a lover.
A lover.
Like it sounds like it was like going to be a business transaction of some kind.
Okay. And what time was she supposed to meet him? Do we know?
We don't know what time she was supposed to meet him. She just said it was that evening.
Okay.
But she was supposed to call Carl at 8:30 p.m. that night.
Okay. So maybe it was like she was going to try to make this deal and then give him the info.
Potentially.
Okay.
So that same evening, between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m., Mimi received a call from a friend where they discussed an upcoming social event. That call ended right about 8 p.m., on the dot.
Okay.
But when 8:30 rolled around, her business manager, Carl, didn't hear from Mimi. He attempted to give her a call, but no one picked up. And this seemed odd.
Yeah.
When no one heard from Mimi, Stella Hunter called the police and met them at her Bel Air home.
How long after was it that Stella called the police?
It was a few days.
Oh, okay.
The front door was unlocked. And the lights in the house were still on.
Weird.
One of Mimi's neighbors had noticed that her house lights had been on for actually a couple of days.
Ooh.
And they tried to call her over and over again. No answer. The neighbors knocked on the front door. No answer. They even tossed pebbles at the windows to see if they could like get her attention if she was there.
Huh.
And nothing. The police then entered the house.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure the front door was unlocked. But then again, this is the 40s before everyone was locking their doors.
Sure. But still, it seems like she was just like running out to do something really quick. Like mm-hmm. She left the lights on, the door is unlocked. Like she's just going to step out because she's got to call Carl back here in a second and then just disappears.
Yeah. When the police entered the home with Stella, they encountered a salad that had been left out on the dining room table. The fridge was fully stocked, and parcels from things she had purchased were sitting by the door.
Oh, wow.
There was also a dress laid out on her bed as if she was about to change into it or she had just taken that off.
Mm, okay.
Her 1941 sedan was still in the garage. And police noticed that there didn't seem to be signs of forced entry, robbery, or any kind of altercation or physical violence or anything like that.
Okay.
Mimi's friends didn't really know what to think.
Yeah, I don't know what to think.
Right, but they postulated maybe she decided to go on a trip on a whim. But that wasn't really something Mimi would do.
Yeah.
She had numerous upcoming social engagements lined up, and it would be very unlike her to not at least call and say she wasn't going to be able to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Police contacted local taxi companies to see if maybe she took a cab somewhere.
Sure.
None of the companies had received a call to that address.
Weird.
The only thing that police found was a postcard in Mimi's mailbox. It was from Long Island and said, quote, Olga gave me your news, Lillian.
Olga gave me your news, Lillian.
Yeah, signed Lillian.
What was the news, I wonder?
I know. Mimi did have a sister named Olga Herman of Hewlett, Long Island.
Okay.
along with one other sister and three brothers. But when police called Olga and inquired about this, Olga said she didn't know anyone named Lillian.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Police also questioned the gardener at Mimi's home, who said that he saw a white-haired, middle-aged man sitting in an expensive-looking car in the neighbor's driveway for about a week leading up to her disappearance. It was like the guy was sitting there watching Mimi's house.
Oh,
almost.
I hate that.
Police were like, okay, maybe this guy was potentially a realtor because it was known that Mimi was going to sell the house.
Right.
But nothing came of that lead.
Huh. Did they ever find that guy?
No. Oh. They couldn't pin down exactly who he was, and no one fitting that description came forward in the subsequent investigation. The house was also dusted for fingerprints, but no foreign prints were discovered.
Wow. Even if she had somebody over that night, like meeting with someone. Was the meeting at her house? Do you know? Huh. That's weird.
Mm-hmm. I will say that there's no answer to this. Like,
awesome.
Like, there's no... She disappeared and was never seen again.
That's crazy. Vanished
off the face of the earth. Yeah. Let's keep postulating. But, like, right. It sucks that there's no answer.
Yeah.
Cold case. In the days leading up to her disappearance, Mimi had visited a fur coat seller to buy some luxurious furs of baby animals.
Girl, you don't have any money. Stop buying shit.
She mentioned to the clerk at the store that she couldn't place the order right then.
Because she didn't have any money.
Well, she said she had to talk to her husband first.
Who's dead.
Mm-hmm. Mimi quickly realized her mistake in speech and told the fur seller that she meant her family. She was like, no, I need to ask my husband. Oh, sorry, I mean my family.
What?
Yeah.
That's
but she had never asked her family for their approval on any purchase ever. Because they went to the family and they were like, do you know what this is about? The police.
Mm-hmm.
And the family was like, no. Like, we don't, she's never asked us.
And
we don't control her money. Like, that's the thing.
Was she close with her family? Like, did she talk to them?
It doesn't seem like
often?
It. Oh, it doesn't seem like she was very close with them.
That's weird that she would say husband.
Yeah. It is strange.
Because it's been a few years since he passed at this point, right?
It's been 6 years.
So it's not like it happened recently. And you know how some people, when they've recently lost someone, there's still that
100%.
Habit of...
I remember when my mom died, like the day after, I was looking for her will, like in the house. And I was like, I'll just call her and ask her.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up my phone and and then I was like, oh, fuck, she died.
Yeah. I've heard that happen a lot with people because it's just a habit. You're going to call that person.
Right.
And then the realization hits you. But 6 years.
It would have been processed by then.
Yeah.
So I do want to, there were a few things out there on the internet about what this might have been.
Okay.
She might have just been making up excuses to get away from the salesperson. Like, she wanted to buy furs, but he was pushing things at her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, trying to sell
like
her furs. Like a salesman. So maybe she was just trying to get out of making a commitment to a purchase.
But then why would she change and say, oh, I mean my family?
I think because he probably knew that her husband was dead.
Hmm.
So I've done that before when people pressure me into sales. I'm like, oh, I can't. I have to do X, Y, and Z. Sorry.
Sure.
Bye, bye, bye. Get away from me.
Bye, bye, bye. I don't know what you're singing over there, but it's not in sync.
Did you ever have hit clips?
Hit clips.
Yeah, it was like these tiny little electronic things, and it was like a little disc or a weird, I don't even know how to describe it, but you'd put it in these little tiny sound machines, and it would play like 30 seconds of a pop song.
No.
And I feel like NSYNC Bye 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 was one that I had.
I've never heard of those.
Oh. I did.
So they only give you 30
seconds?
Yeah,
yeah.
Of
I don't even know why it was a thing. I was like, this is so cool.
That seems like such a ripoff.
It was. It really was. So, as the investigation continued, Mimi's white calfskin handbag was located in a phone booth on August 24th, 1949, close to a supermarket on Wilshire Boulevard. This was about 4 miles from her house in Bel Air.
And she didn't take her car and she didn't take a cab. And she's 4 miles away. Okay.
Well, here's the thing. In the purse was her ID, some money, keys, her bank card, and some makeup, like a lipstick and a compact. There was a note that was tagged to the side of the purse that read, quote, Police Department. We found this at beach Thursday night.
Huh.
But when police looked at the purse, there wasn't any sand. There wasn't any trace of salt water on it. Who left the purse there?
That's interesting. Because at first when you said that, I was like, oh, I wonder if she drowned herself. But then I think, well, if she was going to do that, why even take all her stuff?
Right. Why even take the purse?
Huh.
So on August 29th, 1949, 11 days following Mimi's disappearance, an LA County judge declared her dead. This was done so that her attorney could access her accounts, pay debts, and figure out her estate at the time.
I was going to say, 11 days feels like kind of a short amount of time.
So it definitely was. It's interesting that the judge did this so quickly because at the time, normally people had to be missing for at least 90 days to be ruled dead. So yeah. It was weird that the judge did that. And I think he got called out on it because the judge went back and said that he had made a mistake a few months later and then reversed the decision.
Okay.
And then she wasn't legally declared dead until 1956.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Insane. So the last thing Mimi was seen wearing was her $25,000 worth of jewelry, which included a diamond breastpin, a diamond encrusted bracelet, and two diamond rings.
And who saw her?
She went to see her business manager that day, remember?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Police never found these items and assumed that she had them on her at the time of her disappearance as well. They mm-hmm. never found the diamond jewelry.
Okay.
In the Mason County, Iowa Globe Gazette from August 24th, 1949, random, but the country was picking up the story.
Yeah.
Detective Sergeant Jack Fergus said there is every possibility of foul play in her disappearance.
Sure.
Fergus was a key figure in the investigation, being quoted in several articles at the time. He knew her as well. He said of Boomhauer in the Los Angeles Times on August 26, 1949, quote, Mrs. Boomhauer was a vivacious bundle of nerves. I've known her for years. She drank a little, but she certainly never touched narcotics.
A bundle of nerves.
Yeah. So we're getting a little portrait, a kind of a deeper dive into Mimi as a person. Unfortunately, like that's, this isn't the end of the story. I have a lot more, but that's it.
Yeah, as far as like her description, her background.
Description, background, and the investigation.
Okay.
It never went anywhere after that.
Wow.
Yeah. She just disappeared and no one ever saw her again.
That's so sad.
I know.
Did her family ever speak out about it?
Nope.
Mm-mm. Weird. That's weird to me.
Yeah.
Did we ever find out who Lillian is?
Nope.
Ooh.
Now we move on to theories.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of theories out there as to what could have happened mm-hmm. to Mimi. One of the big theories was that she committed suicide.
Mm.
Maybe Mimi was depressed and kept on a mask that hid her real feelings. Just because someone is the life of the party and known as the Merry Widow doesn't mean that they aren't experiencing some kind of inner turmoil. We have to acknowledge that she disappeared on the anniversary of her husband's death
mm-hmm.
and at the time where she was sinking financially.
Yeah, I mean, those things will weigh on a person.
Right. Yeah, maybe it was all too much, yet there's not a ton of evidence for that theory.
Yeah.
Like, not being found, there wasn't a note, the car was still there, no taxis. So where did she go and with who?
Right. How far away from the beach did she live? Like Bel Air, I'm guessing that would be like a solid 30-minute drive to the beach.
I don't know.
Because back then, I mean, there wouldn't have been quite the traffic or road system. So my guess is it's not that far from a straight shot. And I would think it'd probably be like a 20 to 30 minute drive.
Mm-hmm.
So walking that is going to be a solid, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours mm-hmm. if she did, in fact, go to the beach.
Right.
Which
right.
we don't know.
Well, and the purse was what the note said that it was found at the beach.
But anyone but that, could put a anyone purse could have in that put phone there. Booth.
Right, right. Mimi was rumored to also have a gambling problem.
Okay.
And the only man, there was one suspect named in the case from police, Tom E. Evans, who was affiliated with mobster Tony the Hat Cornero.
Oh, I feel like Tony Cornero came up Tony's in the come up a Comedy Store episode,
yeah.
maybe.
He was all over doing knows what.
The mob was in it back then.
Yeah. They were doing everything. Sorry.
And it was hilarious.
It was Just great times, money. Evans was hosting one of Cornero's floating casinos. This was like a semi-legal thing that you could do. Was okay. Just have like these pop-up casinos, essentially.
All right. Like Ozark on a boat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually on a boat, too, because like...
It's a floating casino.
Well, I mean, not just... I mean, floating on a boat, but also like floating as in like just popping up in random places around the city.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But also it did, they did happen on boats too.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Sorry, I don't know. I couldn't really get around that. So Evans was hosting, I just said, one of the floating casinos, and someone reported that they saw Mimi with him on the night of her disappearance at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. Mm. Apparently they were having drinks. However, this was reported by an unnamed witness. So take that with a grain of salt.
Dang it.
Evans actually denied even knowing Boomhauer and said the witness must have been fully mistaken. I do want to say, I think I wrote this somewhere else in the episode and I'll get to it again.
Okay.
But Cornero also had a home in Bel Air in the same area.
Okay.
I don't know. That doesn't mean anything.
Sure, but it's interesting.
But I just want to put it out there proximity-wise.
Yeah.
In an article in the Long Beach Independent, the title reads, Scar-Faced Man Sought in Widow's Disappearance.
Scar-Faced Man?
Mm-hmm. Apparently, a Scar-Faced Man was making repeated overtures to Boomhauer to rent her mansion for one of those floating casinos.
Oh, interesting.
Boomhauer's friends told investigators that a disfigured man had approached Mimi on several occasions to try and pressure her to do this.
A disfigured man.
He just had a scar on his face.
Sure, yeah.
They said disfigured. The article says that Mimi paid him no mind, didn't really say anything or make any kind of deal with him. In the same article, police talk about also breaking into a locked fur storage vault in her home and finding nothing in there. I just put that in there because of the same article I read that stated that. So there you go, people.
Information.
Oh, and also Tony the Hat Coronero also had a home in Bel Air. I know, I already said that, but I found where it was.
Oh, okay.
It was just a paragraph later.
Okay.
So, it doesn't seem likely that the mob was involved here.
How did we get there? That they weren't involved?
I mean, I just said that because, like, there were no other connections made.
I see. Okay.
Right? So, it just doesn't, like, nothing pans out that she was rumored to have this gambling problem, but it was never confirmed. And none of her friends said anything.
I don't know.
Here's the thing, Kate. You can't rule any of this out.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Like, but I'm just saying it didn't seem likely.
Gotcha. I don't know that I would rule that out right away.
I mean, to me, it didn't seem likely. Mimi wasn't out of money just yet. That's the thing. And she still had several possessions she could sell. Her late husband's hunting trophy collection was worth almost $300,000 at the time.
Damn.
Yeah.
For a dead animal head?
Yeah.
Why do people want those? Who's buying those?
Rich people. Oh. But after her disappearance, when the lawyer was selling things off to pay debts, an elephant trophy with real 15-foot ivory tusks.
15 feet?
15 feet long.
Are we sure it's not inches?
I checked that. I looked in the newspaper.
Insane.
However, newspaper at the time in the 1940s said 15 foot.
I didn't even know they could grow that big.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's 2.5 of me.
That's crazy.
I'm a tusk.
I do have to leave in about an hour. So.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. You do. I was like, this is going to be short. And I'm just like telling you about skincare. And I'm a tusk. Jesus Christ. When they did look at that trophy at the end, and it was found to have plaster instead of ivory. She had taken off the tusks and went ahead and sold them and then replaced the tusks with plaster.
Okay.
Theories have also indicated that Boomhauer was in a romantic relationship with a new man.
Okay.
A new man. It's reported that Mimi only dated sort of casually after her husband's death.
Sure.
But people seem to glom onto this because of that husband remark at the first store
that
she made to the salesman.
Weird.
Mimi's friends said that she didn't have any kind of interest in getting married again.
Sure.
However, there is a possibility that she could have been having a secret relationship and maybe they decided to elope.
No, I don't think they eloped. I mean, not ruling anything out, but as social as she was, as sociable as she was, and how she loved all her events and everything, she's not just disappearing on her own volition. She's,
I hear you.
That's.
I mean, but also she maybe she was looking for another rich guy. And, like, whatever he wanted her to do.
But if they eloped, I feel like we would have heard from her.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
maybe.
Yeah, that theory doesn't hold up for me.
Maybe.
I do think it's very possible she was seeing somebody, but I don't see that they eloped.
Yeah. This case is also thought to be connected to the disappearance of Jean Spangler.
Jeannie.
Yeah. A found purse with a weird note was also a factor in that case, with that note saying Kirk that they found in her purse.
That I think was Kirk Douglas, but okay.
Yes. And Tom Evans, who was associated with the mob, was also questioned in the Spangler disappearance
case.
Oh,
that's interesting.
Yeah. The theories stretch back to the Black Dahlia murder.
Yeah.
I know we've mentioned this before and we'll eventually do it in depth. As a quick refresher, the Black Dahlia case refers to the murder, brutal murder of Elizabeth Short, whose body was mutilated and found in a vacant lot in Los Angeles in 1947.
I know that I covered her, but when did Jean Spangler disappear?
Oh, I didn't
pull that
date.
I can't remember.
Do you want me to look it up real quick?
If you don't mind.
What?
If Black Dahlia was 47, Mimi was 49.
October 7th, 1949. So just a few months later.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, not necessarily connected, but
well, here's the thing also. Of course, Black Dahlia is like the one of the biggest cases in Hollywood. But despite, you know, the numerous investigations and countless theory, that was never solved as well. But some people have connected Mimi to that investigation just based on like the disappearance, the note. As with Jean Spangler, the theory of Dr. George Hodel. Is it Hodel or Hodel?
I think it's Hodel.
Hodel. George Hodel comes up in the case as well. And of course, while George Hodel was not formally charged or convicted in connection with the Black Dahlia murder, his name surfaced in the case years later. And his son, Steve.
Yeah, his son is we talked about that a lot.
Yeah. And I printed out this thing because Steve wrote about Mimi.
Mimi.
Yeah. And he had said that the Boomhauer crime and most of the known facts and linkage are summarized in BDA, so I won't repeat it here. Anytime you do not have a crime scene, it makes the criminal investigation extremely difficult. That was the case in three of the seven killings that were happening at the same time. And there's actually a map. I wanted to show you this, Kate. There's actually a map of all these murders and disappearances.
Let me see.
Take a look at that. If you
reach. Okay. That was a big reach. Oh, yeah. So they're all kind of
in the same vicinity,
in the same area. Yeah. And then what is that? 1, 3, and 6. So the Franklin House, Elizabeth Short, Gladys Kern. We haven't covered her.
Oh, I will talk about Gladys Kern.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, it is interesting.
A lot of people look at this, you know, Steve guy who's saying that his dad was the killer. And he's
written
like,
a lot of books.
Yes. And it says here as well, suspect wrote note to police on victim's purse and left in phone booth, block printing, expert identified handwriting as potentially belonging to Dr. George Hodel. Who knows? I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
So Mimi got wrapped into all of this just based on location, based on time.
Sure.
All of that. So the final theory in this case posits that she faked her own death. And she just decided to get up, leave, and get the hell out of Dodge.
What would be her reasoning for that, though?
Why, question mark? external pressures, maybe gambling debts, financially. Maybe she was embarrassed by all of this. I mean, maybe she left her purse in that phone booth on purpose.
I did think about that she left it there just to try to, like...
Why would a murderer just leave that purse there? But then who knows?
Or like, if someone really did legit
or someone found
find
it
at the beach.
Yeah.
But why wouldn't
they just take it to the police department?
Yeah.
Instead of just leaving it in some random phone booth 4 miles from where she was found on Wilshire Boulevard. Is Wilshire Boulevard like close to the beach?
I'm trying to think of what distance it is. Wilshire Boulevard is a main street. But also, it's been a while since I've been to LA, so my directions are...
Fair enough.
I didn't even know how to get around anywhere when I was there, so now, forget it.
Who knows?
But the thing that I keep thinking about is the salad and the lights on.
Yeah. That's the thing. It was like she was about ready to have dinner. She changed. The lights are on.
And it makes me think
packages are still there. She didn't take
anything with. Someone
came
to the door.
Right. There's still a few more things.
Okay.
Theories that we'll get into. So maybe, again, as I was saying, why would the murderer want to leave the purse unless they wanted to make it look like a suicide? Or she wanted to make it look like a suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Who had it out for her? Why was there no struggle? Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no evidence of a struggle. It almost seems like she went somewhere with someone she knew. In a rush, potentially. I don't know. Captain Emmett Jones of the LAPD likened Mimi's disappearance case to that of Mrs. Gladys Eugenie Kern.
Okay.
Who's on that
mm-hmm.
paper that occurred a year prior. Kern was a real estate agent and had been lured into a vacant Los Feliz mansion and then stabbed to death.
Oh my God.
And her killer was never found.
Oh.
If Mimi had been showing her house without anyone else present,
mm-hmm.
There's a possibility that she was murdered.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's an article that's like, wait, it's on here. What did it say? Wealthy widow feared victim of knife slayer.
Oh, God.
It's one of the articles that came out at the time. So a user on Reddit, I went into Reddit mm-hmm. to see what people's theories
yeah.
were, and I pulled a couple because they were interesting.
Okay.
So a user on Reddit, Conquer99, had this to say about this up and leaving theory.
Okay.
Quote, all these signs make me wonder if Miss Mimi had a gambling problem and had racked up debts and squandered much of her fortune. If that was the case, I would imagine the shame for a woman of that time, coupled with the pressures of being a socialite perceived as wealthy,
mm-hmm.
could be enough to pressure her to simply take her best jewelry and run away from it all. I wonder if they know what happened to her money. My grandmother used to conduct all possible transactions in cash only. And if Mimi was gambling, there would likely be no record of that. When we cleaned out my grandmother's house, we found $28,000 in an old shoebox in her closet.
Wow.
All in hundreds and twos. My grandmother had experienced the Great Depression, as Mimi would have as well, and did not entirely trust banks. This is common for that era. Mimi could have taken her jewelry and any cash she had stowed away, eventually sold off her jewelry, and started a new life for herself, free from the stresses of socialite life in Los Angeles.
I mean, the thing about the not trusting banks, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it makes sense.
Yeah. Like, there's no real record of money that she, you know what I mean, had accumulated. So on this same Reddit thread, Blue Nails Betty says...
Okay, Betty... Yes, with that screen name. Love it. I want to see those blue nails. I love your name. I love the name Betty. You are it.
You are of the time. A, quote, Merry Widow was apparently also a nickname for a bustier corselet.
Like an article of clothing?
Yeah, an article of clothing. Considering the swinging sex scene in Hollywood/Los Angeles at the time, I seriously doubt she was given that nickname for her personality. I'm not judging, just saying she may have had quite the interesting sex life, and those were usually covered up, so it might not have been reported to the police.
And now I'm a little unsure, Betty.
Well, I don't know. Add in her dwindling finances and a mystery date, and I'm guessing she was romantically involved with a con man who swindled her money and killed her for her jewelry when her finances got low.
Wow, Betty.
This
just
is just
really
a theory from Betty. Betty went all in. She's like Merry Widow. She was. Slutatious.
Yeah, I hate that word. Betty, I don't know about all that.
Fair enough, Kate. That is the disappearance, the unsolved cold case disappearance of the Merry Widow in her Bel Air mansion and her diamond jewelry, Mimi Boomhauer.
What do you think happened?
I genuinely don't know. So let's think about this and put it all together. She's having financial difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
She's needing to sell stuff. She wants to sell the house. I almost want to say that someone probably came over to look at the house
mm-hmm.
and something happened where she left with that person.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm also curious about the guy who was like staking the place out for a week before she disappeared.
Yeah.
Was he the person who, like, decided, oh, I'll meet with her? Because
everyone wasn't aware that she was experiencing financial difficulties. It was her business manager, you know, and then her estate afterwards. Mm-hmm. So once her estate was settled, I didn't put this in there, but once her estate was settled, it was only a third of what it was left.
Yeah.
There was not much left because she did have a lot of outstanding debts, but those did get paid off by the lawyer.
Yeah.
It makes me think that someone was scoping her out because they thought she was
had more than she had,
right? And yeah, who was this gentleman? Who was this guy that she was going to meet with? And it almost seems like she didn't think too much of it because she was going to call her business manager at 8:30. So she's like, I'm going to meet this guy. I'll give you a call afterwards. And if it's your business manager, it's making, like you said earlier, it's making me think it was going to be some kind of business transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like someone was probably going in to take advantage of her.
Because I feel like with the salad, with all, like, I could see a situation, this is just me speculating, but I could see a situation where they have their meeting, he's scoping the place out just to kind of get an eye of things.
Yeah.
He sees that she's wearing a bunch of jewelry. He just, you know, they have their meeting and everything's good. Great. Nice to meet you. And then he leaves.
Yeah.
She takes off her dress, changes clothes. She's going to have a little salad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's got to call her business manager soon. And then that person that who's just met with her knocks on the door. He's forgotten something. He has another question.
Mm-hmm.
Or oh, my car won't start. Can you help me out here? So she just is like, sure. Leaves the lights on, leaves the door unlocked because she's just going out for a second to assist him with whatever it might be, and he takes her.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't explain the purse.
Yeah, why the purse?
Because she wouldn't just take the purse out.
There's no body.
Because I feel like even if she did decide to take her own life and did it by walking into the ocean,
a body would have washed up somewhere, right?
Well, not necessarily, but I do feel like the jewelry, a piece of something would have surfaced. But we've covered cases where nothing's ever found, so it is wild. I don't know.
I think she went somewhere with somebody, and I think she was probably murdered.
Mm. Yeah, that's a wild case.
I know, right? Insane.
And especially because it was happening when all of those other women were being murdered or disappearing, like Jean Spangler.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it is interesting because there could be a connection.
Jean's body either.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah.
Let us know your thoughts and what your theories are. You can do that by going to... I was like, what's the thing here?
What?
You can either do it if you're listening on Spotify. We do a little question with each episode. So we'll put that on there where you can talk about your theory. If you're listening on any of the other platforms like YouTube or Apple or whatever, you can leave it in comments or on Facebook. And if you want to see all the ditties that we do on social media.
Social media ditties.
You can do that by going to Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube.
At Horrorwood Podcast.
But the ditties aren't on YouTube, I just realized. But
you on Facebook and Instagram.
There you go.
There we are.
But you can still listen on YouTube.
On YouTube.
This outro has really gone off the rails.
I like it.
Great. You can also send us an email. And just a reminder, we are always collecting listener stories.
Please send in those stories.
They don't have to be Hollywood related.
Nope.
It's kind of like a break from our traditional type of cases and just to listen to you guys and your experiences. And if you have a haunted story or like something that happened to you or if something like criminal that you were part of, I mean, hopefully you weren't the perpetrator, but
yeah, please don't admit to any crimes.
Yeah, we don't want to be accomplices, but you can always send those in at
HorrorwoodPodcast@gmail.com.
And you could be like Erica and
Erica Viola, whichever.
We love it no matter how it's pronounced.
Either, even if it's not even those two, there might be this.
Maybe
third.
It's an alias. But you know what? We're glad you're here. And you can be like her and hop on over to Patreon by going to
patreon.com/HorrorwoodPodcast.
Yay!
Yay! Boomhauer. Thank you.